Mr. President, honorable delegates, thank you very much for allowing me to explain a bit the publisher position on the issues surrounding copyright, visually impaired people, and the publishing industry and the effect on it. I would like to start my little presentation by stepping back a little bit and looking at the overall context, not just collective licensing. And I'd like to make one principal general statement because I think it is important that it is on record. Publishers want visually impaired people and people with any other reading disability to be part of their readership. We want them to be able to read. We want them to participate. Like librarians, booksellers, teachers, we believe, we see the visually impaired community as our friends, as part of the group that share our passion for books, for reading, for exchange of ideas, and for learning. There is a long history of cooperation between publishers, publishers' associations, and visually impaired and organizations representing their interests in many countries. There is a history of them sharing and helping each other out. We also share the same ideal for the future. We want visually impaired to be readers like anybody else. We want them to be able to buy our books, to read them in whatever way they can or they want to. And that is the joint ideal that we are striving for. Clearly, the situation as it is now is far from perfect. But I do think we should just step back for a second and look at the past few decades and the way the technology has opened new opportunities. The amount of material available to visually impaired people has grown exponentially, and the new electronic communications tools have offered new opportunities so that visually impaired can now become much better integrated into any kind of professional network or any kind of professional environment. When we look at the technology and the accessibility for visually impaired people, I think it is important that we see all the players who are involved. And that's not just the visually impaired on the one hand and the publishers on the other hand. There are many people who are working to improve the accessibility between these two. It starts with the manufacturers of assistive technology. It goes on to the manufacturers of general hard and software like operating systems, which are increasingly becoming more accessible. Then we have to speak about the software specialists who create text formats such as PDF or Word document formats, who again need to address the issue of visual impairment and of accessibility to their formats. And then we have the content publishers who have to make a decision in what form, in what way, shape or form they want to publish their content. Of course, another important player in this area is government, which has to make a decision on how much money it will spend to make sure that visually impaired people have access to content. This is a very developing area. Technology is moving quickly. Early systems are still very rudimentary, but they are getting better. And so I do not see, as one of my previous speakers has seen it, a constant race with visually impaired people always being one step behind the latest technology. I actually believe that there is some convergence, that we are moving closer together. I'd just like to mention two specific things in that area. First of all, the video screen, or the actual screen, is becoming less and less an important interface in the internet world. We are now moving on to other kinds of interfaces, and it is now being used in many different ways. And the second area I would like to mention is the next generation of the internet. Nowadays, the internet is made for people who can look at screens, and so you have a lot of visual and graphic elements. But the next generation, Tim Berners-Lee calls it, the founder of the internet, calls it the semantic web, will be a structure which allows machines to interact with one another. And where machines interact, things have to be unique, and where things are unique, it'll be much easier for the VIP software, as it improves, to access it. So technology is part of the solution. It is part of the problem, but it is also part of the solution. As Charles Clarke, the famous copyright advisor, once said, the answer to the machine, even for the visually impaired people, is in the machine. Technology, therefore, gives us great, great hope, but it also makes life more complicated, of course. All assistive aids make copies. Most of them are ephemeral, and such uses, of course, must be legal. The interesting thing is, of course, that we do not no longer have just two kinds of formats, the one format which visually enabled people can read, and the other format which visually impaired people can read. We now have shared formats, formats which can be read both by which can be used both by visually impaired people and by sighted people. Audio tapes is one example, but also in the end, many electronic formats. It doesn't matter whether you see certain databases on a screen or whether you use a braille reader to access them. And that is a good development, and we welcome that. It is a one step closer to what we want, that is, that it doesn't matter how you read and how you access a book. That is also, unfortunately, the area, though, where the problems start, these shared formats, because shared formats mean there is a market there, there is an opportunity there for commercial entities to participate and to make things available to all readers, both visually enabled and visually impaired. We've heard a little bit about audio. Audio is, in many countries, the biggest growth market, together with large print. The commercial large print is, of course, now with aging populations becoming more and more popular, and one can even envisage books like Harry Potter now being available, or soon being available in large print, simply because there are people in their 50s and 60s and 70s who find it more comfortable to read like that. In audio, of course, the situation is very, very complex. It is true one cannot speak of one audio format. But still, there are many audio formats which can be shared, and I think it's a great thing that audio is growing, not only in the Anglo-Saxon, not only in the English-speaking world, also in other areas. I heard from my colleagues from the Dutch Publishers Association in their talks with the Library for the Blind that one of the areas they are seriously looking at is whether commercial audio is not an opportunity in the near future for the Netherlands. That, of course, would be good news for everybody. E-books, fully electronic books, which again, through interfaces, are hopefully and will be increasingly accessible to visually impaired people, have enormous potential. But it is a very, very fragile market. And here, we have to be very careful that we do not, through unnecessary tampering, destroy or endanger this very delicate plant. And of course, there are problems with electronic formats, and we should mention those as well. Electronic formats for visually impaired people imply that the full electronic text with markup is made available to somebody who can then transfer it into something more accessible. This is a difficult area because, of course, the full electronic format, particularly well marked up, easy to read, is in many ways the crown jewels of the publishers. It's our source code, and it's something we do not like to give out of hand lightly. If we give out electronic formats, publishers want to be assured that the format is safe, that they will not find copies anywhere. In this context, I have to say that visually impaired are just as good and just as bad as anybody else, and they are just as law-abiding as anybody else, or not as law-abiding as anybody else. And that's why we need to be sure, and we need trust and cooperation. One of the interesting things we've heard earlier is about costs. Audiobooks are very expensive compared to normal hardback books, and even more expensive compared to cheap paperbacks. But that's not because of the excessive profits of the publishing industry. It simply costs a lot to make audiobooks, and it costs a lot, even more, if you consider the low number of copies in the end. So I was glad to hear from, again, our Dutch colleague that the charities face the same problem. It is expensive simply to create an audiobook, and that's why publishers who distribute and sell commercial audiobooks charge a lot more for them than they do for hardback or paperback. One of the questions which was placed before you, one of the requests by the Blind World Blind Union, was wouldn't it be great to have a copyright exception? But are copyright exceptions really the solution? Certainly, I feel, for formats that can be shared between blind and visually enabled people, I cannot see this as a solution. There is, of course, the in-principle objection to any exception. Every exception limits or destroys a potential market segment. This applies particularly for open formats. I was delighted to hear the report from the DAISY Consortium, because the DAISY Consortium is a success story, and the DAISY format is a success story. And yet, what is considered a success, that there is suddenly a format which can be used by visually impaired and visually enabled, now can be used by dyslexics, actually, as the voice recognition and as the speech synthesis improves, can be used by anybody. Isn't that a great thing? Yes, it is a great thing. But then, of course, we are immediately looking at a growing market as the potential for commercial exploitation of these kind of formats. And that, again, is a good thing, because commercial exploitation means that the costs are not shared by charities, but in the end, it can be the costs can be distributed to the wider public, and everybody benefits from this kind of thing. The question, of course, is also, does the copyright exception provide a real solution? And that is not the case, in our view. Copying under an exception is not cheaper, and we just heard of the costs that the libraries have, even if they had an exception, to create their master copies. Someone must make the master copy, and only in commercially available copies are the costs really carried by the wider public. The other reason why we object to copyright exceptions in principle is that this is an area that is not static. We are in mid-flow. The technology for visually impaired people is changing constantly. The formats in which books are being published is changing. The standards are being developed. The pace at which all these areas are moving forward is quite dramatic. And copyright exceptions tend to be static and tend not to be able to cater for these changing and varying needs. The biggest concern is, of course, the area of electronic copies. And I already mentioned to you, these are the publisher's crown jewels. I would like to see Microsoft being asked to hand over its source code to anybody, actually, certainly, or even for a charity for visually impaired people, so that they can adapt it to their requirements. The ideal solution remains, of course, full equality between VIPs and visually enabled people. And I think we're getting there. But the solution to the problem is not the copyright exception. The solution, as I see it, is to create and to improve the working on shared formats and to improve national cooperation. That is the only way that we are going to solve these problems. Let me just take the example again of the Dutch library. I spoke just last week to my Dutch colleagues about their relationship to the library, and the Publisher Association in the Netherlands are quite happy and content, not only because there is a long-standing cooperation, but also because they all recognize how things are changing. And they were saying, yes, we've got a great agreement with them, but actually we're talking about them about a new agreement, because now things are changing, we are moving ahead, the audio issue is becoming much more important, and so there's a constant dialogue there, which allows both the a benefit for the publishers. They know that what's going on, they can cater their requirements to their concerns, and the librarians can also tinker the things that they are receiving, the rights that are granted to them, to the actual requirements of the visually impaired people. One thing that was also mentioned was electronic transfer across the globe. Again, we're talking about full-text electronic content of a book. A publisher who hands that to somebody else, no matter who he is, will only do that if he trusts him. Trust is something that you cannot legislate on. Trust is something that has to be developed. We have heard many examples, and DAISY is another example, where trust between publishers and the users has been established. That is what is going to be the basis for international file transfer. I don't think that legislation can help here. We've also heard about technological protection measures and how they hamper and how they interfere with the functionality of the software that visually impaired people use. That is a problem, and we as publishers are, of course, delighted to apply pressure to those software companies as well and to say to them, you have to improve your formats. We want our formats. We want our books to be read by everybody. So if somebody is visually impaired, you should make sure that your format enables them to read it. So this is an area which is dynamic, and therefore not an area that is settled enough to think about or even consider national, let alone international, legislation. Daisy is a success story also because it has a publisher cooperation, just like the example we heard from the Netherlands. There are many things that are required in this context. First one is, of course, a dialogue which not only creates trust, but mutual understanding. As we've heard this morning, the issues that visually impaired people face are very, very complex. And I can assure you that you've only heard the tip of the iceberg. It's all a lot more complicated because no two visually impaired people are alike. Everybody has different preferences, everybody has different requirements, and it is right and it is just and supportable that each of their needs should be catered for. Equally, the publisher issues are very complex. They change depending on the business model that a publisher pursues, depending on the technology that is available in that market, depending on the structure of the market overall. And that is why we promote voluntary cooperation. Ideally, and certainly in the countries which have a reproduction rights organization, a solution through collective licensing. We've heard earlier about permission service, how cumbersome they are for the visually impaired. I can assure you, these kind of permissions requests are equally cumbersome for the publishers. They yield no money because they are traditionally given, as is right, free of charge, given the enormous expense that these charities have. They are still require work. They require discussions, liaising with the agent or the author themselves. And in all these areas, publishers incur costs. Therefore, collective licensing is something that they like as well. They retain control. There is an organizational structure which ensures that there is some kind of trust, there is some kind of structure, and some kind of homogeneity among the publishers. And at the same time, individual publishers don't have to deal with permissions requests. So collective licensing allows tailor-made solutions. These are flexible over time. These can be flexible internationally. And it certainly is a cooperative approach that we would endorse. I think, therefore, we should also be looking in this area at national solutions at first. The context is quite different in different countries. The infrastructure for visually impaired people is different. The publishing industry, its shape, the nature of the business that it is, even the libraries and their infrastructure are quite different in every country. The ability to use these new technologies is different in different countries. So the ability to use these shared formats is different as opposed, and therefore, IPA supports national solutions based on voluntary cooperation. We have seen experience and seen examples here of how these can work, and they work because, again, we are all part of one family. We are a part of those who have a joint passion for books, for reading, for the exchange of ideas through the written word, through learning and cultural exchange. And that's something we should celebrate. Thank you.